thoughts and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents.
Good morning and welcome to this November 28th, 2018 edition of Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We are broadcasting to you live from the University of California campus in Irvine, streaming on the web at kuci.org and always available via podcast. I'm your host for the hour, Marie Stone. We are doing what we do each and every Wednesday morning, which is chat with authors about their books, about their process, about their craft. The days when I have the luxury of one or two authors for the entire hour are some of my favorites. We get to take a deep dive. My two guests this morning, Grant Heyer and Louis Perez, are on with me together this morning for a little roundtable about poetry, about music, about visual arts. And we have an intern in the house with us this morning, Annie. So we are all we're all together. We're all cozy. It's warm outside. It's warm in here. So Louis and Grant work both individually and collaboratively, as they will be working in here this morning. So you are in for a treat. In March of 2018, Grant Heyer was appointed the Literary Ambassador and Inaugural Poet Laureate of the City of Anaheim. In 2014, he was the recipient of the Prize Americana for his book Untended Garden, which was also nominated for both an American Book Award and the Kate Tufts Discovery Award. He was the winner of the Nancy Drew Taylor Prize for Literary Excellence in Poetry and the Kick Prize for Poetry. Several of his pieces have been nominated for the Pushcart Prize. Two poetry collections were published in 2018, The Difference Between and Similitude. His poetry has been anthologized in several books. His essays and reviews have been widely published as well. He has served as editor, managing editor, and editor-in-chief of several literary journals. In addition to writing, Grant is a musical artist, a visual artist, a former graphic designer and art director. As a voice actor, he contributed to the audiobook version of the New York Times bestseller Lincoln and the Bardo by George Saunders. Grant earned his BA in English at California State University at Fullerton and both an MA in literature and MFA in creative writing poetry at Cal State University in Long Beach. For more than a decade, he served as chair of liberal arts and art history and faculty senate president at LCAD, where he remains full professor teaching courses in creative writing, literature, creative reasoning, critical reasoning, and senior capstone. Grant.
Well, Hi. Thank you. Hi. And taught at UC Irvine for...
That's right. You're back home.
Near a decade. I'm back home, yeah.
Oh, you're back home. Louis Perez is an American songwriter, percussionist, painter, prose writer, and guitarist for the multiple Grammy Award-winning and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame-nominated band Los Lobos. Louis is the group's primary lyricist. He's a keen observer of the human condition, and his work has been showcased on every Los Lobos recording, beginning with And a Time to Dance. We're going to play some of his music this morning, continuing through the band's most recent album, Gate of Gold. Louis co-wrote songs with his writing partner, David Hidalgo. Louis, help me out.
Hidalgo.
Thank you. I didn't drink enough of my coffee this morning. I'm so sorry.
That's a tricky one.
For his two critically acclaimed albums, The Latin Playboys, their side project. Louis also wrote songs for Tony Kushner's 1994 theatrical adaptation of Bertolt Brecht's The Good Person of the Szechuan at the La Jolla Playhouse. Am I saying all that right? That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. His songs have been covered by many artists, including Waylon Jennings, Jerry Garcia, Robert Plant. His prose work has been published in the LA Times Magazine, LA Weekly, the New York Arts Journal Bomb, to name just a few. As a visual artist, Louis has shown his painting and sculpture since 1975 in several prominent galleries and museums. These two men have recently produced two wonderful books. Grant's new collection, Similitude, is published by Pelicanesis. Louis is just out with Good Morning, Azatlan, a book of words, pictures, and songs. We're going to play some of those this morning. That was a mouthful for these two accomplished gentlemen. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So I told the surface story of you two, sort of the sanitized biography. But Louis, if we can start with you, sort of telling us the real story, the story behind the story, sort of how this creative life began, if it was there from birth, kind of what came first, the music or the words or the lyrics or the painting, kind of take us back to the beginning of your art.
All right. Grew up in East Los Angeles, in the barrios of Los Angeles, the hood, that's where I'm from. I first got interested in
and it all kind of came at once between the words and the music. Music was something that was always around the house. You know, my mother played rancheras and Mexican music at home. She grew up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, so there was country music as well. Saturday mornings there'd be the Saturday through the afternoon, there's country music marathons on local radio, on local radio and on television. There was a library not far. I grew up a very cerebral kind of kid because my father had died when I was 8 years old, so I didn't have that kind of model for doing, you know, things like, you know, climbing mountains and camping and doing all that sort of thing. So I was not exactly introverted. I played on the street like with the rest of the kids. I was a little bit of a street urchin. But as far as things that I like to do, I like to make things. I like to draw things. I walked to the library often and picked up stuff. And music, again, was always it was just part of the atmosphere in East Los Angeles. On the weekends, it was always backyard parties and music going on. And, of course, like I said, music at home, you know, the old radio sitting on the kitchen counter, mm-hmm. always blasting some music there. So the words and everything kind of came together all at once, I believe. I became interested in playing music. My mother gave me a guitar when I was 12 years old. I think it was her version of a youth diversion program, you know, keep me off the streets. And then words were always of interest to me. And then I heard, you know, Bob Dylan. And my sister was a few years older than I. She brought home Joni Mitchell and Judy Collins and Leonard Cohen. And really the words started to mean something more than not to discount. I mean, I listened to a lot of soul music when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, I listened to the Four Tops, Smokey Robinson. Smokey Robinson, actually, as a lyricist, I thought was I was really impressed by. But by the time I got to Bob Dylan, I was just completely enthralled by it.
I love it. Grant, why don't you take us back to the beginning?
Well, I was
writing ever as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. My parents were reading to us all the time. I had an older sister, 20 months old. I have an older sister, Susan, who was ahead of me in school, so I learned to read along with her. My parents say I was reading at 3 years old or something like that, and writing stories as long as I can, and poems. Poems were always my first love, and my grandparents would tell us stories, you know, tucking us in, making it up ad lib, and I just natural narrative. My father's mother and father homesteaded out in the desert on the other side of the San Gabriels in Little Rock. And so regularly we'd have a weekend up there running around through the Mojave, you know, naked in the sun with a windmill and finding arrowheads and seeing stories and hearing of people that were here before, and that was just fascinating to me. And so I always had that longing to search for the connected human story that came before and the stories that are around, and just always saw everything as this in terms of narrative and storytelling, for I think because of that upbringing. I wanted to do a callback to you saying Joni Mitchell. It made me think you just did Joni Mitchell's 75th birthday tribute,
right?
Oh, that's right.
Like last week? Or
yeah, it was about a week or so ago. It was Joni 75 was produced by the Music Center. It was at Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and it was a whole bunch of artists, and we were asked to be part of it, along with Chris Christopherson and Nora Jones and
James Dale.
Yeah, just tons of people. It was a very cool experience. Of course, we put our own spin to it.
Sure.
It was just actually David and myself and Steve Berlin, who's our sax player, and we brought in some other musicians that were playing play traditional music. I mean, really kind of look way back in the jungle kind of traditional music. Mm-hmm. And so we did this whole kind of spin to it. It was really unusual for a take on Joni's stuff, and I don't think there was anything like that on stage that night. It was a really cool night.
That's a really cool, yeah, wow. So Louis, talk a little bit about Good Morning Aztlan that's coming out now. I mean, this is just an incredible project. I've seen the PDF version of the book, and it's just beautiful. So kind of talk about what it is and where it came from.
Well, the idea started as I have a friend who's a visual artist in Tijuana, Mexico, and he's we've been friends for a little bit. And there was a woman in Mexico City who has a small publishing company, and he's done some work with her, and she got the drift that we're friends, and she said, hey, would he be interested in doing something like maybe a facsimile of a sketchbook or a journal or something? And then he asked me if I was interested, and I thought, well, okay. And then I really started thinking more about it, and then I called up a friend of mine, Luis Torres, who served as editor for this book, and I said, Luis, I got this opportunity to do this thing. Now, I don't have Harper's Row like knocking on my door, so maybe we should really like do something with this, you know? And I said, what do you have in mind? I said, I'm thinking like just doing, you know, like a retrospective of work. What do you think? And then he said, let's do it. So I called up Rodolfo, and he said, cool. He's a designer, graphic artist, so he started laying out stuff, and I sent him these big plastic containers full of drawings and stuff, and I said, you curate this thing. You look at all the art, and you figure out what you want to use, because if you leave it up to me, we'll be doing this for the next 10 years. So it took us 3 years, because my schedule just crazy, so sure. Thank goodness that Luis was there, did a lot of the heavy lifting, and then ultimately my friend here, Grant, has done a lot of the heavy lifting for this companion CD that's also we're producing right now. The content. Okay, we took 240 songs that I've written, and we pared it down to like 100 of them, you know, and then we massaged the lyrics a little bit so they read better on the page, and we threw in, you know, a bunch of art, and then there's some essays. So there's essays on visual art by Rodolfo Arana Lopez, and essay on the music, songwriting by Dave Alvin from the Blasters, and it's kind of like an academic approach to what I do from this woman who is a professor in Claremont, the Claremont Colleges. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is just a bunch of stuff, and then there's an interview in there. The way I've always put it, and I told Grant about this, is that we all have that shoebox somewhere in the closet or in the drawer or under the bed or something where you collect all these things that you just can't see throwing them away. Yep. You don't know why you have them.
Yep.
And this is kind of like my shoebox. I just kind of emptied it out on this book.
So great. Mm. So the poems or lyrics are paired generally with a visual piece, with a painting that you had done. Mm-hmm. But that is not how those were produced originally. You didn't have a painting that then inspired the poetry.
No, they're not even illustrating sometimes it this one kind of works with this one, but there wasn't any intention to make it fit together.
I think that juxtaposition is really interesting, though.
I think so too.
It brings a new texture to the lyrics, and certainly a new texture to the art.
Right.
I just hadn't realized that's how it came together. That's really wonderful.
I really felt that it should be something that, even as trite as it may sound, that people could just open up anywhere.
Yeah.
And and what became very clear to me is that once we started putting there's some order to the songs, to the song lyrics. We put them in thematic chapters, and that was an interesting process to do that. You know, say, wow, you know, okay, but this, there's love, there's this, there's all these other things going on, and it was a lot of things. Looking at the work that way.
Yeah.
For one thing, when you do a kind of anything that's kind of retrospective, there's something really spookily kind of final about it, you know. So I made sure I made my annual physical with my doctor. it was just interesting getting all that stuff out and putting it out in front of you. There's also these little bitty stories that I had written, and I say little stories because there's some of them are only about a paragraph long, a paragraph and a half, and some are a little longer. I just call them micro stories, and I actually wrote some new ones for that, and then under some stuff from way back, and put them all in there.
Yeah. Great. Tell me a little bit about the experience of looking at your work from time and, you know, temporal distance, and what you may have learned about yourself, about your creative process, about your areas of concern over the course of your life that may have surprised you as you're looking at kind of the span of this work and, you know, the body of what you've produced. Mm-hmm. Did something stand out that you were like, I didn't realize I've been captivated by X since, you know, 1960.
Right. Yeah, there certainly was that. We talked about it briefly in the car over here. What it came into real, it became very clear to me that everything I've written, whether it be the stories or poetry or songs, I always go back. excuse me. I always go back to where I've come from. You know, that wealth of experience of growing up in the predominantly Mexican American Mexican community in East Los Angeles, and just as an aside, I'd just recently heard an interview with Ice-T, the rapper, on the radio. I was driving home from San Francisco last weekend. We did two nights at the Fillmore Auditorium. And he said something really interesting that really resonated with me. He was looking back at what he's done and the life he's lived and the work and the songs that he's created. And he said, you know, I've never had to make anything up. Hmm. And I thought about that and goes, man, that really nails it. Because I've never had to. I've always had... It's all true, you know. I never had to make anything up. I always look back at my experience through looking at people, the whole migrant experience that goes on, people coming and going, and you know, we weren't poor, we weren't certainly we didn't have a lot, you know. We as kids, you know, we hustled as kids, you know. We did, and it was it's just all these stories. I realize that that's what I've been doing. That this is this all this work is really not about me. Mm-hmm. It's about all of us. And when I say all of us, it's because after I toured around America early out, I realized that, man, there's a lot more similarities than differences.
Yeah.
And I came back with that experience and wrote more songs. And at that point, I set out to. Write in a way that was more universal, something that not only that, even though it comes from the experience of me growing up in East Los Angeles, somebody who lived in Poughkeepsie or Duluth or whatever could relate to that as well. So I made it so that it wasn't very kind of on the nose.
Isn't that the great thing about art, is you can take some incredibly specific experience, mm-hmm. and it becomes so very universal where you're touching all of these people.
Of course, you know, I'm not going to get, you know, political or anything like this, but there's a lot of things
that
go on. There's a lot of things that go on, and I didn't want to, like, hit anybody over the head with a picket sign or anything, mm-hmm. you know, but I did want to let them know that the experiences that we felt growing up in that community, it happens everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everywhere where there's an ethnic group that somehow is marginalized. Minneapolis or New York or places in the South. And I just wanted people to feel that they're not alone in this, you know, that there's a bigger world and there's a lot of us that experience the same thing, and that we can make a difference. I hope that I can make a little bit of difference in what I do. The first record, of course, that I did was in 1983, and like they say, when your first record takes you, you know, 10 years to make, your second record takes you 10 months. So, when I went to write the second record, I thought to myself, well, you know, I could either take this band down the road to where we're just a fun band and good to dance to kind of thing, and or I could take it down this road where I felt there was more of a responsible approach to it, where I can actually do something, say some things that means something to me and that could possibly mean something to everyone else.
Do you find that as time has gone on, your work has gotten more serious? Like, did that gravity kind of come on with age or experience, or do you kind of feel like there's a consistency of fun and play, or did it, you know, do you kind of feel a bit more serious later in life?
I think as we all get older, and I'll be 66 and in January, I guess for all of us, when we see that there's more Christmases and Octobers and behind us than in front of us, you start to think about. But you have that moment where you think, what was all that about?
We're going to play some songs right now.
Yeah, we have some. Yeah, good timing, actually.
You know, yeah, right? We're going to figure out how to hook that
underscore.
Up.
you think about like what you did and what if it meant anything. And I see that there was a thread where I felt when I reached that fork in the road that I was going to do something that was meaningful and that would lean more towards something a little more serious, but there's always the funny bone too, you know. And I've always enjoyed that. I grew up watching sitcoms and I've always enjoyed that too. So there's that element too. But as I get older, I think I'm thinking about wanting to say something a little like I always have, but maybe I wanted to. Continue kind of that thread in what I do.
Yeah. I'd love to play a little bit. I'm gonna. Oh, go ahead, Grant.
No, I was gonna say Gates of Gold.
Gates of Gold, right? Yeah. That was the last record, Gates of Gold, and the song Gates of Gold was really about like what is there for us, like, you know, after all is said and done.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. Well, it could be mortality too, of course. But then the Gates of Gold could also be the prospect of what's on the other side for, like, migrants that are coming across the border.
Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of how that song, I don't know if you could have written it when you were 20 or in a different political climate. I think it's just so relevant and poignant now.
Yeah, that certainly had a lot to do with it. I again, thinking about, mortality, thinking about, you know, what the time that I have left and... What did I do with it? And I kind of came to the conclusion it wasn't necessarily squandered. I did do a few things.
It's a matter of time.
And it's okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let's tee up one of these awesome songs. So this is from the album
Good Morning, Aslan. Fun.
And it is the title track of the song.
Right.
Let's dive into that for a moment. Hold on.
Honking on the horn, hurry up, we're gonna make him late. I gotta say one, park with an arrow through the middle of this place that I call home. When I get lost, I don't even got a nickel. There's a piece of dirt I call my own. I gotta say one, two, three more things before I go on. You can run and try to hide away. Here it comes. Here comes another day. You can run and try to hide away.
How awesome was that? That was Good Morning Aslan. Hold on just a moment. You have been listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I am here this morning with Grant Heyer and Louis Perez. We are talking poetry. We're talking music. Louis is obviously the head lyricist and head of Los Lobos, and we are playing some of their music this morning. And so, Grant, let's talk a little bit about similitude, and we'll just go into that, and then we're gonna tee up some more of Louis's work on Joyride. But kind of take us into similitude and the origins of this collection and kind of where it came from.
Yeah, thank you. This is a book that actually represents all the poems were written in the last year. And it was actually a byproduct of a challenge that a fellow poet gave to me of writing a poem a day for a month, for National Poetry Month of April a year ago. And at first, when I was asked about four poets that we get together and talk about other poets' work and writing, said, let's write a poem a day for a month. And I at first went, no, I can't possibly do that. I don't have the time. And then immediately my inner voice said, come on, you're a poet. You're going to regret it if you don't. Of course you can. So I said, yeah. And so after 30 days, or 30 for 30 in April, we called it, and other poets were writing a poem a day for National Poetry Month, I went, how about May? And two poets dropped out and two new ones came in. And then after May, I went, June? And then it was crickets. And so I just did it. I set the deadline of midnight or before I went to bed, a new poem that hadn't existed at the beginning. I could have a seed line maybe, but it had to be a totally new work. And it had to be publishable was my own criteria of I couldn't just, you know, I had to make it of a certain quality. And it was really a challenge. I had no idea. So what I wound up doing was doing a full year. That in June, I just emailed it to myself, and then some other poets picked up in other months. And at the end, Mark Gibbons at Pelicanesis said, well, that's a book. And we had talked about it. We'd never seen a book of a year of writing. And then so that was going to be released for this release date here for Similitude. And then right before it was going to go to press, I went, you know, it's a missed opportunity if we don't talk about the process of, because so much of writing a poem a day was how to generate. Where does it come from? And so I was finding new chops and new muscles as a writer I never knew I had. And it's just it's like working out. Louis knows, too, from being an artist, it's the keen observation of the world. It's finding those details that say more than the thing often, or just an interesting detail that suddenly takes on a life of its own. You just chase it with faith that it's going to turn into something. And So a lot of that process was, you know, was the actual writing process for writers. Like, where does it come from? And, you know, I'm old too. And, you know, you get set in your ways as a writer. You get your comfort zones. And when I teach creative writing, you know, we tend to write to the end of the page because that's the frame. And we better wrap it up. We've got two lines left. And that's limiting. I found all those things, those biases I had that I didn't realize I had. And so sometimes it would be 11:30 at night, and I'd be coming home from Laguna, and I haven't written a poem. And so I started dictating them ad lib into my phone and found a new freshness and a new way of composing on the fly. And then, remarkably, I was trying to find the poem in it. You said, find a poem that surprises you. The one poem, if I can think of it, you know, I'm old again, that when I went to type it in, I realized that I had an inherent structure in it that was not traditional form structure of iambic or a certain meter. It was a non-traditional meter, but when I started typing it, I saw the pattern, and I had written a good two stanzas identically in meter with sonics just in my head.
Wow.
In a non-traditional way. So those kind of surprises.
Is that just how your brain is structured, do you think?
Who knows? Yeah, probably. I mean, obviously it was there.
Right.
I was... So it's like when you learn an art form. You know, you'd learn maybe at Laguna College of Art and Design, where I teach, we teach color theory. Every student learns how to turn an object in space, color and all those basics, fundamentals of perspective. Mm-hmm. And or learning a guitar, you know, the F chord is horrible. And then pretty soon it's not. And pretty soon you're doing these changes. And when you're composing, suddenly you're it's just part of your acquired knowledge.
Right.
Base. And so, yeah, I wrote poems for a long time without ever showing anybody, and I had several poems where I just go, too many rhymes in me. Because what I thought when I was writing is poetry, at the beginning was really writing song lyrics. Mm-hmm. Every record I have, I have a vinyl collection of thousands of records, and every record I had, starting with Meet the Beatles, my parents bought for us at Jimco, I put pieces of paper in and copied the lyrics verbatim, every ooh, and if you look at our sleeves, my sister and my collection, it's just packed. I mean, I just copied it. And so when I thought I was writing poetry for the first, 10 years or whatever it was I was writing since I was a teen, before I was a teen, it was really song lyric. But I had that sense of rhythm and structure, and then I had to unlearn it.
Mm-hmm.
And then... So a part of the challenge of writing similitude was to have it just... one of the things that it got me there was just the different ways to compose poetry. There's a section in here where there are diptychs on the page, and if you look, they're paired poems, and often the titles are related to each other, either as opposites or as allusions to... And so that would happen when I would pull up the poem on the computer, and there would be the poem from before, or a poem, and I'd use that as the seat. Just to get it going, and then chase the words from there, and trust that it would come. So it might be the opposite of the line, or saying the same thing in a different way. And then so those poems that did that, I just paired them opposite. So it's always been a process of just trusting the muse and writing that spark.
Before we dissect one of these poems, can you both talk about the difference between song lyrics and poetry? Because I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day, and they were like, they're kind of the same. Leonard Cohen wrote all these, Bob Dylan, they both wrote poetry, they both wrote song lyrics. Maybe they're interchangeable, and I'm getting the distinct impression they are not interchangeable.
First of all, let's start with the knowledge that it is literature. It is the written word. It is words. I taught Louis poems and short story in 1964 and Willow Will Survive, too, all in my creative writing classes for years before I knew Louis. Because they are, number one, they're real. They don't try. You can't make that up. And because it's authentic without trying, well, Bukowski's Tombstone, two words, don't try.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
And so Louis has always been real, and it's always been, Yeah, the story of everybody. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs, but I totally relate because it's about family and friends and birthday parties. And I knew, you know, the same streets. It's really a love song to L.A. And my first book, Untended Garden, is a love song to the homestead, my parents' homestead, and where I live now in the same house and the neighborhood and then the history of this place and who came before. You know, the Tongva Indians. My wife is Native American blood. So it's about authenticity. Mm-hmm. Then the vehicle to put it forth, you know, poetry is music. It is lyric, and it has natural rhythms and the same elements. But Louis can speak to this more. He's written more songs than I have. You have an advantage with a band or with music because you have that driving beat where the poem itself doesn't have to carry it, right? Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a musicality in just a poem or just a word without music. You know, that's what I've discovered, that from writing songs, when I'm writing prose or poetry, there is cadence. There's a certain way that the hard consonants and soft vowels kind of work, and there's this musical thing to words innately anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so that's what I've always found. And when I write lyrics, you know, I have to believe somebody's going to be able to sing it. And there's always a certain words that kind of that's a good way to end a line because it just sounds that way. And when you really think about words in general, they're just sounds that come out of our mouths. You know, if you listen to somebody who speaks Thai, it sounds different to us, but it's all music, right?
Yeah.
It all sounds like, it's just sounds that are emanating from our vocal cords. You know, and just like strumming a guitar, it's that vibration. And all of that's involved, I can't believe I'm getting like all hippie on this. No, but it really is, yeah. Right? It's the sound of the words, yeah. And I look for
sure.
Cadence and resolution, and you know, if you resolve from the major seven chord to the one chord, it's just it's all the same thing.
Yeah, and Louis's lyrics have poetry in them, and that was one of the genesis of one of the incarnations of your words. So the word in this project that Louis and I are currently working on, even at as we speak this morning,
right.
We're finishing
right.
It up.
In the card
that we have a new track. So Louis wrote his words as songs, refined them for the book, taking out some of the choruses and things. So the second version sits there. And then also the short stories. But then as we were talking, we were looking for pieces, and I was commenting about how his songwriting is so poetic, and there are lines that are just gems or gold. And just you could distill them and make it even another form. And we had a few conversations, and you said, well, how would you?
Yeah.
And it was the would you.
Would you?
That was like, go ahead. Yeah, you want to? And he goes, please. So trusting me with his words was really an honor and is an honor. And so I made it kind of I've never known any process like it. Again, this is a new, I've never known a project like this CD project we're working on, where it turns into erasure poetry.
Hmm.
So, but not traditional erasure poetry where you try and turn the text into something other than what it was. Collier Nogis, who taught at UCI, has a great poem, a book out. With erasure poetry of documents from the war that her father was in, and turning them into like love stories of soldiers coming home. So you take this instrument of war and turn it into this thing of beauty. I love that transformation. For Louis, the gold was there, and it was really a further stripping away. It was an extension of the process that was already organic in the book. Just pulling it down to the lines, changing the meaning a few times or making it more ambiguous. Like Tony and Maria, the word now, I just leave. Now and for the rest of our lives, we said we would. Now and then it's implied, maybe not, it gives it a different meaning, or a new color. So those exist now.
It's almost like an act of translation. You're almost like a translator.
Yeah, very right? much so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good observation. It was. And again, it was just trusting the process and coming to it. And it's really, you know, the conceit is, or the misnomer is, I was calling them as I was doing it, Aslan Alchemy.
Cause yeah,
but alchemy doesn't work because you can't turn things into gold. And I'm starting with gold. So I can't fail, you know. It's like it's there. I'm
more
just
gold.
Pulling the gems. Yeah, I'm just shining the spotlight on the poems within the lyric.
Yeah,
I never thought of taking things away. I've thought of adding things. I was thinking, well, there's some of these songs that because I tell a story in 3 minutes and 52 seconds, mm-hmm. and so I think, well, I'll take this song and idea and expand it like a song called like Riva's House, right, which is about domestic violence, and I thought, well, I could turn this into a short story.
Hmm.
But what Grant did was he took a lot of these things and he took things away so that somehow the things that he's taken away leaves a space that kind of just hangs in the air, mm-hmm. in a way. Mm-hmm. Where it allows you to kind of just fill in the gaps on the things that are just implied. Mm-hmm. And so taking the idea that I've always had of making these things so that they can be interpreted and translated into other people's lives, it's taking that even a step further, yep. where it's almost like the way you react to it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really an interesting process.
In Louis' book, Good Morning Aslan, the words and pictures and songs of Louis Perez, 27 Spanishes, which is a new cut on the CD that's coming out.
Got somebody to do that.
Louis does added before, just a little comment for context.
Yeah.
And for this one, he went, the story of the conquest of Mexico in 4 minutes and 38 seconds.
Yeah, the length of the song. Yeah. Because that's what I've always done.
Do you
want to
read that, Louis? And we can kind of do our little dissection.
This is a kind of a different one for me because this is actually a little bit cheeky.
It's fun.
Yeah, this is kind of just a fun thing. but this is the story of the conquest of Mexico, when Cortez kind of came over and landed there and a bunch of stuff resulted. Again, the story of the conquest of Mexico, 27 Spanishes, in 4 minutes and 38 seconds. 27 Spanishes arriving from the sea, blades of steel flashing, cutting down the eagle's tree, came riding in on mountains, on red and silver steeds, into the city of the serpent, through the gates of the Otomi. A soldier dressed in iron asked, where did you all come from? From the earth of four directions, from the purple clouds above. Just then, the rain came falling down as wind began to blow. The sky then turned to crimson, with the sound so deep and low. Said the brown prince to the Spanishes as he raised his mighty hand, don't come here bringing worries to the people of this land. Their swords then turned to deadly snakes like the ones found in the grass. Get back into those silly ships before we kick your ass. But the strangers made an offer, said the brown prince said, why not? And they ended up with empty plates and boot soup in a pot. Later, they all became muy friendly, and their blood was often mixed. Now they all hang out together and play guitar for kicks.
So great. So kind of take us into that, and let's dissect it a little bit about kind of where that poem started, if it was an opening, if it was an image, if it was an idea, kind of surprises that came to you as you were working through it.
It just popped in my head that it'd be cool I listen to the music, and a lot of times the music itself will get in my head and in my ears, and sometimes words just sort of appear. You played Good Morning Aslan a while ago, and that was, we had done this record. We had not a title for it, and we were done. Dave came up with this musical idea, and we talked, and he said, what do you think? And I said, yeah, I think we should do this. So we called everybody up, Mitchell Froom, Chad Blake, engineer and producer, got everybody back together, and here we go. Cranked up the machines again, got into the studio, and we started doing this. And I was in the lounge with the door open, and I'm listening to what's going on, the tracks getting laid down, and I just heard it in my head. Good Morning, Aslan. I go, like, wow. So that turned into the day in the life of the Mexican neighborhood.
Wow.
And this same thing with it just popped in my head. 27 Spanishes. It started 37. Dave liked the way that David Aldo liked the way 37 sang better. So we go through a lot of that stuff. And I thought, what, cool. And so I just started writing these stanzas, and then some of them are very. I think it owed its it deserved for me to take this approach where there's some kind of flowery sort of lyrics, because we're talking about indigenous culture where there's a lot of magical things going on. And so the snakes, the swords turned into snakes, and, you know, kind of the magical stuff. But then at the same time, you know, the Montezuma, I guess, would be telling Cortez, okay, what are you doing? Are you coming over here and causing trouble? You come over here with your horses. We've never seen those things. And, you know, get out of here before we kick your butt.
Right.
So I thought of making it a little bit fun, too.
Right.
And then, but it's all real stuff. You know, toward the end when he says that, the blood often mixed, because that's what the creation of the mestizo, mm-hmm. where the European and the indigenous, and sure thing, their blood often mixed, and they eventually played guitars together for kicks. So I made it kind of fun. It's a little different than what I do, but that was the idea, is just to put a historical narrative into a musical context.
Yeah.
The song Wake Up Dolores.
Another one, right.
Another one.
Indigenous, right.
Indigenous, which has native language in it.
Do you want to read that one?
Yeah. I'll read the distillation of it rather than the lyric. We actually have it on CD, I think. I don't know if you want to go to that, but let's do the poem. Let's focus
do the
on
poem.
That.
Okay.
Wake up, Dolores. My legs are tired. My face feels hot. Wake up, Dolores. Please try to walk. Oh, sacred night. Oquilton, Moyacatla, our light is dim. We have so far to go. The stones are hard on this endless road. O sacred night on Quetzal plumes of dying suns and purple moons. O sacred night. As an eagle soars, our spirits fly to our gentle rest under loving sky. O sacred night on Quetzal plumes of dying suns and purple moons. O sacred night. And I know this as a song that I love, which is totally different delivery of it.
Yeah.
But I was guessing, I was playing English major, saying, right, wake up, Dolores, you say in 1964, so click your heels all you want, Dolores, you can never go home, and it's a Wizard of Oz, and I'm going, this is about coming home, maybe, or a little bit about finding roots, and you went pretty close. It's about walking. Yeah. It's about a migrant coming home and having visions.
When we were texting back and forth, and you texted, said, "Yeah, this is kind of what I'm getting from this." And I said, "Boy, you like nailed it, because this song, this lyric is really based on a true event that happened in Central America. I don't know, by now it's probably been 15 years, where a lot of the indigenous people were displaced and they're forced out of their land, their tierra, you know, where they belong.
Did you say 15 minutes ago? Just how current it is.
Right, right.
Yeah, this was a while ago. Yeah, right, that's true.
Yeah, right.
There's these indigenous people, and then finally there's some kind of resolution, whatever. They're coming back to their homeland. And as they're coming back, it's just a couple, the indigenous couple. He's telling Dolores, he says, try to walk, come on, we can make it. And as they're getting closer, the sky is turning purple and all this magical stuff, and you know, the magical realism of Marquez comes to mind, and all this thing is kind of happening. They're coming back home, and all of that mythical, magical things are starting to unfold in front of them. And it's and that was the idea, to take again a historical event, mm-hmm. and turn it into something which was a song. There's actually even a line that's written in Nahuatl, mm-hmm. that comes from the one of the codices from Mexico that describes the Noche Triste, which is the Night of Sorrows, when Cortez came in and Montezuma was going to throw this big party, and then at the end of it, they pulled their swords out and started killing everyone. And so it was just this weird stuff was going on. So all this stuff is happening in this song, and then Grant takes it and condenses it even more. You know, he calls it distilling because literally it's pouring it through this, and now it comes this concentration of what this song is about in its most visceral sort of sense in this case, right?
Yeah, and bringing it back down to the personal, which then makes it even more universal.
This thing, you know, what's really striking me here is the relationship between the two of you is so beautiful. And I'd love to just spend a few minutes talking about, you know, artists are so interior and they're so twitchy and introverted. I am. I'll just speak for myself. And so this collaboration is so beautiful. And you, Grant, earlier said the word trust, you know, that it's about so much trust to say this thing came out of my soul and I'm going to hand it to you. And, you know, you take care of it and you do this thing to it and transmute it into something even more compressed and beautiful. If you can both just, I don't know what the question is here, but just talk about this really intimate collaboration and trust and kind of what that experience is like. Because you obviously, I feel like your relationship is so unique and so much closer probably because of this artistic intimacy that I think I've just never talked to artists before who collaborate like this and who trust each other this much with their work and just what that's like.
Well, for one thing, that I got to say that one, and thank you for that observation,
yeah.
But you would think that this would come from someone, from two people who have spent, you know, their whole lives together or artistic lives together. But for Grant and I, you can, from when we met, you can count that in months. This is about because
yeah,
we really have not been friends for that long. But the creative process and the artistic approach to anything you do, it just opens up this whole thing that time doesn't exist. None of the conventional linear things that how we live as humans doesn't exist. And so this is literally kind of this you know, if particle theory. Maybe that's somehow all of that kind of comes together and this stuff happens. The other thing, too, is important to say is that I've worked in a collaborative for 45 years. That's how I work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've worked with David. We've been writing songs for 50 years.
Sure.
I've worked with the rest of the band and on stuff, and that's what I feel more comfortable with. I spent a lot of years by myself, you know, in a room, just in my head, in my backyard as a little kid, you know, stacking rocks and making things, and I felt good working with other people because I was kind of this just a hermit as a child, that now I'm just, wow, this is great. So I love getting out there and working with other people. In the case of Grant, it was just wow, it just. It made it real easy.
It was effortless from the first conversation.
Right.
It was a couple of years ago, I think.
Sure. Has it only been a couple of years? A
couple of years, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe three.
Yeah.
But our first phone conversation was, you know, it was through Facebook Messenger, I think, first. But then I think we spoke for more than 2 hours just talking about everything on the phone.
Right,
about
right.
And you offered to come to my creative writing class, brought your guitar.
That was, you were inviting me. I think that's what was the deal, right?
Yeah, it was.
Because you made a connection that. Because with my son.
I was teaching your songs.
Yeah.
And you said, well, I can visit your class. And I went,
yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Grant, you've got to be an interior. You're a poet, for God's sake.
I mean, yeah. But also, you know, I I'm multidisciplinary, so I was an editor for years, and I've co-written with a bunch of people.
Oh, yeah.
But it takes a certain amount of, it takes a mindset where you're just trusting each other to share ideas. And, you know, it's, you know, some of the ideas we go back and forth like, oh, you sure? No, yes, okay. But it's really organic and natural. There's never been any, it's kind of a shared vision. Oh, that would be fun, and trusting each other and seeing where it goes. I mean, it's building the plane while we're flying it. The CD actually came I mean, you were midway. You were the book was almost done. We talked about the Neruda book from Copper Canyon that had the pages of Neruda in his own hand, which made it intimate.
Right. Right.
And I said, you should record it on a CD. I think we were at the mix, Mark. And you said, not in my own voice. And then you came back and said, well, how about my friends? Or you had that idea before, and you said, would you read one? And then
I thought that there was a lot of what this book is about. It's about music. I mean, predominantly, there's 100 songs in there.
Yeah.
But what's the missing element is that it's the music.
Yeah.
So I said, well, how about if I get a few friends together to pick some songs real simply and maybe get a few friends to kind of read some things, and that would be a cool thing to do. I didn't expect for the response to be as it was. You know, I started to ask some friends, and I really didn't want to impose on them. How you ask somebody something, and or somebody asks you a question, you wish, oh man, I wish you hadn't have asked, because now I have to do it. But I didn't want them to feel that way, and it was just the opposite of that. Everybody wanted to do this. Grant has the numbers of how many people are
involved. Yeah, we wound up with 47 tracks, so it had to be two CDs, 17 songs, and 30 spoken word performances. There's 46 people total, including a couple of bands on there. The thing about it is, the thing that made it possible was the idea of doing it on the cell phone and saying, we just want it. It's more about the intimacy and the authenticity of the performance. We don't care about mic bumps or things or turning on and off. It's a performance and the feel of it more so than anything. And so some are low tech, some are high tech. Some John Doe's sounds like he's sitting on the bed at 3 a.m. like Lyric says.
Yeah,
and you hear him fumble, and you hear the turn on and off, and it's this great. It so just cool. flowed organically.
Yeah,
so great.
And the other thing was just to have everybody involved. I wasn't going to direct them and tell them. I mean, when you want somebody to come over to sit in on something, whether it be a musical rock, project or something. What's the point in telling them exactly what to do?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So in this case, I said, for the musical artist, I said, pick out a song you want. And some of the songs I never expect. Here's John Doe from the punk rock band X, and he picked this ballad.
I love it.
And so it was. And then all of the readers, we gave them the pieces. We thought about that, about what they should read, and they were going ahead and just doing what they wanted with it.
So great.
It was great.
We are totally out of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I didn't even open my notes to start asking the questions that I actually had for you guys. So we gotta do this again somehow.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure.
This is so fun. So
thank
let's
so
make
much.
Sure that we know how people can find the books, the CD. It's coming out.
Okay. The book is available on Amazon. It is Northwestern University Press is distributing to bookstores. So some of the indie bookstores are carrying it. You can go directly to tiachucha.org.
Oh, cool.
I'll leave you all up to you to try to figure out.
I'll put all that on there. Okay. I'll put that on the podcast.
And you can order direct from them. The audio project, the double CD, is going to be available as a package. You know, it's going to be a bundle. And you can go to loslobos.org and for more details.
It's a special edition, and all proceeds go to Tia Chuchua to benefit literacy. And we're not. There's all the money goes to literacy causes, writers on writing.
Because Grant and I are getting older, and we're thinking about going to heaven now.
Grant, Louis, thank you so much. This was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today. Stay tuned. There is more great sounds coming up, some jazz coming up on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're going to go out on Tony and Maria on Good Morning Aslan. That's all the time we have. Be back here next Wednesday morning, 8:09 o'clock a.m. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great, great day.
Mexico to LA doesn't seem that far, but still a world away. Went up to see your husband Tony, who left some years ago.
to say, come be with me, I miss and love you so. I promise that I'll care for you, wrote Tony to his wife.